Theater of the Mind.
Every physically oriented profession has a particular set of hazards and risks associated with it, either due to injury or just the normal wear and tear of doing the job. To see what those hazards are, just meet with a lot of older workers or retirees who did the same job for 30 or 40 years and see what the toll on their bodies has been. Old bricklayers have a characteristic stooped posture, heavy upper body build and gait, which comes from decades of carrying and handling hod after hod of bricks over the years. Heavy equipment operators and hunters commonly have hearing loss from the years of loud noise damaging their inner ears, and as I made my rounds of interviews a few months ago, I lost count of the number of old machinists I shook hands with who were missing fingers. Manual lathes, mills, saws, and grinding tools are made to cut metal and are savagely unforgiving of the delicacy of human flesh. The shop I work in is tooled entirely with CNC machines, which are a bit less scary because the cutting operations are automated and take place in an enclosed cabinet with shielding between the work and the operator. Don't get me wrong, there's still plenty of ways to maim, crush, and kill yourself with a CNC mill, but the amount of time you're exposed to the treacherous bits is shorter and more sporadic. So, by the numbers, it's a lot safer. That being said, as much as I like the place where I work, I was a bit disappointed when I found out the place is 100% CNC. I fell in love with the manual milling machine and really enjoyed the connection to the workpiece that manual operation affords. You're just more involved. Every tooling pass is made at the exact location to where you physically crank those positioning wheels, and when you're done, you're holding a part that just seems to have more of you in it, and preferably not dripping off of it. When I work with the computer-controlled stuff, in exchange for the increased accuracy and better safety, a bit of that gratification is sacrificed for me. I guess that's why I don't mind doing a lot of deburring and other finish work. The feeling of physical involvement with the piece just makes the results that much more satisfying to me. Home haunters understand this concept. They don't necessarily make their own props and sets just because they can't afford to buy them. Like Denhaunt says at the end of his segment, it's fun to buy a prop, but it's a lot more fun to build one. Involvement and interaction make for a more satisfying experience. We who haunt understand this concept intrinsically as creators, but what about the audience? Wouldn't the same principle work with them? Observation is, by itself, a passive act. When they watch TV or go to a movie, most people are content to quietly sit there and allow themselves to be spoon-fed the artist's vision. But not everyone, and not at every movie. Some theaters have a pretty engaged audience who like to yell back at the screen. In a really bad movie, that can actually help salvage the experience and make it more enjoyable. Reading about the theater antics during the cinematic run of Snakes on a Plane made me wish I'd actually paid the $7 or $8 to see it. Deadpool was a great flick on its own, but the fourth wall breaks and basic lunacy of the film seemed to invite a lot of rowdiness from the audience, and that made it even more fun. And don't get me started about the Rocky Horror Picture Show. That abysmal turkey of a movie was a well-attended classic for many years, solely by virtue of the audience participation. It wasn't just a movie, it was an experience, an event. There's just more excitement in being a participant than in being a mere observer. Of course, participation is a relative term here. Shouting back at the screen and throwing rubber snakes or toast around in the theater is a way of interacting with the other moviegoers, but it doesn't change the movie. Live entertainment, like the theater, is somewhat more interactive as the actors often modify delivery and timing on stage in response to audience feedback. But the haunt, now we're talking real potential for true audience participation. The audience isn't separated from the sets, they're actually walking through them, among the actors. Making people scream and cower is fun, but there's something to be said for giving people the opportunity to do more than just react. Being given a simple choice adds a lot, even if it doesn't actually affect the outcome at all. A passage can end in two doors, and it's up to the hauntgoers to decide which one they go through to find safety. A pro haunt with a lot of space could feasibly have a differently furnished hallway or room beyond each one, but they could just as easily lead to the same passage and let the guests think they made a real choice. Or a crazed game show host can let them choose what's behind curtain number one, curtain number two, or curtain number three. If you have a lot of actors, you can have a different monster or maniac behind each curtain, but there's no reason the mutant with the chainsaw can't be behind whichever curtain they choose. Of course, if you have a big haunt that gets repeat visitors over the course of the run, it would be pretty cool if a different choice actually gave a different result each time. But we gotta go with what we've got. It makes the experience more personal and more memorable if the audience is allowed to make a choice that affects their fate. And, of course, it's up to us to let them know in no uncertain terms that they chose unwisely. If your haunt gets a lot of young kids, you may have run into the issue of scare versus no scare. Or, just how scary can you be without upsetting parents or being avoided by the kids? This can be addressed by offering some form of self-defense that bolsters the confidence of the little ones and gives them the opportunity to take a proactive role in the show. Something like LED bars or glow sticks with some sort of rattle attached could be cheaply made and decorated to resemble some mystic talisman or magic weapon. The scared kids could be instructed in how to effectively wield them against the monsters, and when the actors approached the bearer, they would know to cower and flee or feign injury when the kid brandishes the charm. Then the timid could complete the haunt tour with full confidence in their safety. A few might even get so emboldened that they go into Rambo Von Helsing mode against the forces of darkness, and your hidden scare cams, if you use them, will yield true YouTube gold. Large groups of older haunt fans in their teens and tweens usually contain at least one person that appears to be having a perfectly good time, but clearly doesn't get scared by haunts. If it's possible for a line actor or staffer to contact this person without their friends knowing, he or she can make a great shill for a staged attack. For example, get their permission to be abducted by an actor in the haunt, and when the monster or maniac grabs them and drags them off scene, they fight and scream like banshees backstage as the monstrous animal snarls or chainsaws roar. Even better if the actor can then lead them by a secret back route to a room with the old severed head on a table prop, or some similar optical illusion gag that lets the group see the grisly aftermath of their demise. The head would, of course, then yell at them and berate them for not coming to their aid when they were in need. That's a story the group will be sharing for a long time. For many years, the gold standard in fully immersive interactive theater was the murder mystery dinner, but that seems to be giving way to live escape room games. Escape rooms, which began in Asia and quickly caught on all around the world, lock a group of people into a room or suite of rooms with a particular theme and backstory, and give the group a finite amount of time to solve a series of puzzles and challenges that eventually leads to a way out of the room. A lot of pro haunters have turned to this industry as a way to monetize their existing haunts in the off-season, and the crossover attraction between haunts and escape rooms should be pretty obvious. However, some conferences and presentations from industry professionals have suggested that this retrofitted approach often results in some pretty lame escape rooms. A successful, quality escape room is designed to be used for that purpose from inception to execution. Just modifying a room that was designed to be a haunt set can give the escape room experience a sort of superficial, hastily slapped together feel. A pro haunter who wishes to use the same real estate for both the haunt and the room escape game would probably be better off designing and building the escape rooms first and then figuring out how to modify them for use in the haunt. But then, of course, those escape rooms can't operate when the haunt is running. Obviously, the best approach for the pro haunter would be to go the multiplex route and keep the escape games and the haunt as separate entities. Ticketing packages can then be a good source of cross-promotion. The home haunter, on the other hand, is faced with a different problem. Room escape games take time, and haunts need to follow a throughput model that keeps people moving at a pace that doesn't back up the line too badly. Obviously, a full escape game would be impossible if you get a steady flow of people to your haunt. However, so long as the guests are led into the haunt in small groups instead of a continuous line, a few elements of the game can be included if the crowd isn't too big. Basically, the guests would reach a dead end that requires solving perhaps just one puzzle to pass through. The door out of the mummy's tomb, for example, won't open unless the right hieroglyphic tablets are set into the wall in the right spots. Or the correct big iron key must be chosen to unlock the door out of the torture room. Or the correct family heirloom must be set out and displayed to appease the angry ghost hindering the group's progress. You get the general idea. Since time is of the essence in a haunt to avoid backups, the choices should be fairly apparent and not too challenging. However, the capacity for human stupidity is indeed without bounds, and it is possible that you could have a group so truly vacuous that even the most obvious solution escapes them. In which case, a wisecracking skeleton or painting in the room could verbally give them the clue they need. The needed item can be remotely lit up, or an actor can dramatically rescue them, while of course thoroughly roasting them for not being able to solve such a ridiculously simple challenge. Adding such an escape room element to the haunt, of course, requires staffing. At least one observer must be off stage watching the group to either activate their exit or clue them to the solution, and then reset whatever the challenge was for the next group after they clear the room. These are just a few examples of ways to get the audience more involved in the haunt. Some of them may not be possible if your attraction is high volume, but it is certainly worthwhile in the planning stages to give some thought to ways that allow people to take part in the show by doing something more constructive than just screaming and flinching. It's entirely feasible that some degree of participation might even yield better behavior from some of the guests. Granted, drunks and douchebags will exhibit drunkenness and douchebaggery under any circumstances, no matter what you do. But some folks, especially kids, act stupid just because they're bored. Some of the less mature hauntgoers that normally assail actors with retorts of, "Oh wow, you're like so scary," or "Oh, that's lame," would be less inclined to do so if you give them something to do. The more personal the event is for them, the more fun they have, the more they remember it, and the more stories they have to tell later. And that's pretty much our goal, right? To paraphrase Denny, it's fun to walk through a haunt, but it's a hell of a lot more fun to be a part of one. So make them part of one already. From the Theater of the Mind, I'm Revenant, and you're listening to Hauntcast.
I'm going now. Heaven help you.
Please like and follow the podcast. Stalk us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Links in the description. And help us by sharing Hauntcast with all your haunted Halloween brethren. Until next time, stay scary.